Hello, and welcome to the Cancer Horizons podcast. In each episode, you'll hear from patients, survivors, caregivers, advocates, or healthcare professionals to do what CURE does best, provide cancer updates, research, and education. For Andrew McMahon, a singer-songwriter and cancer survivor, the act of forgetting an anniversary was a good thing. Along with his band, Andrew McMahon and the Wilderness, he was set to play the Adjacent Festival on the beach in Atlantic City, New Jersey, on May 27th. The date of the festival coincided with a landmark moment in his cancer journey, the first round of blood work, which began in 2005. Before the end of a tour, as part of Jack's Mannequin, he received a diagnosis of acute lymphoblastic leukemia. He eventually underwent treatment with chemotherapy, radiation, and a stem cell transplant. The reminder of that anniversary showed McMahon how far he's come in nearly 20 years. McMahon founded the Dear Jack Foundation, an organization supporting young patients with cancer and survivors, in 2006. In this episode of the Cancer Horizons podcast, McMahon speaks with CURE about life after a cancer diagnosis, shares the advice he has for patients who have recently received a diagnosis of their own, and discusses his newfound love of surfing.
About an hour and a half before the show, I'm working on the set list. And so every day I do the set list, and then at the top of the set list, I put the city and the date. And I asked somebody, like, what's the date today? And they said it's the 27th. And as I'm typing the date, I realized, oh, that's the anniversary of when I was put in the hospital, you know? And yeah. And not that far, we were in Atlantic City, and I had been between New Jersey and New York when I sort of did the initial blood work that ended up leading to my hospitalization and eventually my diagnosis. Mm-hmm. Historically, that has been a very fraught anniversary for me. You know, like in the early years, I think, again, sort of speaking to this theme of denial and whatnot, even when I wouldn't realize the anniversary was coming up that weekend, inevitably I was a mess. You'd find me a mess somewhere, you know, whether it would be on some sort of a bender or just in a heap, or thinking I was feeling sick again and not knowing why, you know? So being in a place now where I can actually forget those anniversaries, like they can almost pass me by and there's no trigger there, and it's not, you know, and I'm on a healthy footing, you know, and that's pretty miraculous, right? It never goes away. You know, it's always there. And I think, at least, you know, luckily for me, I've finally reached a place where my life post-cancer is, one, it's more than half of my life almost now, you know, but two, is so substantial and has been so rewarding. And I have so many good memories on the other side of my cancer. And I think that really is the unfortunate, but also hopeful reality of what it is to survive trauma or a disease is that it just takes time to build up a world for yourself, because you're not going to be the same person, and that's okay, you know. But it took me a long time to make peace with that and say, okay, well then now I have to make this world a good one to live in, you know. And I'm fortunate that you know we have a really nice life, and a lot of good things have happened to me since cancer, you know. Not to, you know, my daughter, my marriage, my, you know, like, I live in a beautiful place by a beach that I've always wanted to live in, you know what I mean? Yeah. And we live simply, but I've been able to feed my family doing something I love, and all that is after cancer, you know? So it's been a process for sure. my first version of like kind of therapeutic exercise was yoga. You know, that was really like I hysterically, like I went to my first therapy session, and the first thing she did was she sent me to this yoga shala. She's like, I think you would really benefit from this. And then I built a very early community out of yoga. And then sort of partially through that community and just the reality of, you know, I more or less grew up on the West Coast in South Orange County. But I moved here when I was in the eighth grade, and sort of everybody already skated and already surfed and already, you know, and like, and I was like not an athletic kid. I was overweight and very awkward. And so I was the kid who would like, I'd shoot the skate videos with a camera. And I would like pal around with all those guys, but I was never like, I just never had the time. And so, gosh, it was probably now maybe 2018. It was the first summer I'd had off since I was a kid in school, you know, because I started touring basically right after I graduated high school. And I was like, well, I'm going to go learn to surf, you know, and I hired a coach and I got in the water and, you know, he took me out a few days a week for 3 months and got me sort of proficient enough so that I didn't feel like I was going to, you know, kill myself or somebody else when I was surfing. And it has really, I think it's just when you connect to nature in such a sort of like primal but very fun way, you know, like the beauty of surfing is that you just have to, you take what you get, right? You know, it's a lot of it is about learning how to understand what the natural environment around you is doing, and then using that to get yourself into like just about the greatest feeling that you can have on earth, which is riding a wave, you know? And so I think it's been very good for me in the sense that it has really hammered home how valuable and how important it is to commune with the natural world, you know? And it's also like one of just the very few spaces I can think of where whatever's happening in my life, and whatever's going on in my business or things that I might be worried about or afraid of or whatever, I just don't carry those things into the water with me. And it's not like, it's not really a conscious thing. It's just once I'm there, it's like, you just have to, you're just present, you know? And I definitely at this stage of my life, and, you know, I'd always been pretty good about keeping the phone at bay and, you know, and like, I I'm not a huge social media guy. I'm not so plugged in, but I'm way more plugged in than I have ever been in my life, you know, and, having a space where I don't have, where nobody can reach me and I can just do something that is, so, you know, it's so akin to just playing, you know? And I think as adults, like, we don't play as much as we ought to. It's really good for the brain, you know, and I've found a lot of peace in the water for sure. The first advice I give to anybody who is being diagnosed, well, there's a couple bits of advice. One is, where are you being treated? And don't just accept the first, whoever diagnosed you or whatever hospital, like do your research and make sure that whatever you have, you do everything in your power to get to the very best doctor or facility for what you have. That's always my first advice. Mm-hmm. Not everybody is that fortunate. And I think that's we could have a conversation all day long about how fucked up that is, but if you have the ability, as hard as it is to go into research mode and whatever, and as easy as it is to just trust the first person you talk to, get a second opinion and make sure you're in a facility that you know has a good track record with whatever you have. Second thing for me is adopting a breath practice. I know that sounds a little esoteric and whatever. But I will say that if I had not already been practicing yoga on some level before I got sick, and if I had not had such a deeply ingrained breath practice when I got sick, I just think that things would have been much harder. I mean, I'm just down to like bone marrow biopsies and spinal taps and all of the things and all the ways that they treat your body. Like even taking chemo, I would just do hours of deep breathing and meditation and visualizations. And those things were massive for me. There were days where I just felt like absolute garbage. And if I could convince myself to sit for 30 minutes and just and take nice long inhales and nice long exhales, the miraculous nature of what the breath can do to slow your parasympathetic nervous system down and to help you take on all the toxicity that you need to take on to cure yourself. I cannot say enough about the power of the breath. There's a reason we call breathe now, you know, like there's a reason we have a program called Breathe Now. As far as navigating the parents, you know, I guess again, this is where being an adolescent young adult is such a tricky thing because that can mean so much. You know, if you're 18 and you're still living with your parents, or you've just left the house, or or your parents are still helping you pay your bills, or you're in college or something, that's very different than say you're 30 and you're self-sufficient, but you really need mom and dad again, you know? And I think, you know, look, for me, my parents and I for years had a very complicated relationship. I'm proud to say it's much less so now, and it's really healthy, and I'm very proud of the work they've done, and they're proud of the work that I've done. But you know, I was, you know, Kelly and I were just getting back together and we had been together for years, but it had been broken up, and we're just getting back together when we got into the hospital. So it created a lot of tension between my family and her, because they, you know, they there was a lot of protection of me, and they were like, why is, you know, there was just a lot of stuff and things that I wasn't even aware of happening because nobody was really telling me these things, you know? I think honesty is, if you can just tell people the truth about where you're at, and if you can just ask them to be honest with you about where they're at, and also like respecting the fact that being a caregiver, whether it's a parent or a spouse or whatever, is just a hall of unsung heroes that get so little attention and so little time for themselves to heal, that I think as best you can to be aware of what it is like for those people who are looking after you. Because I mean, I heard this from a woman I worked with for years it was such a smart thing. It was that, you know, when not one person gets sick, when you get sick, your whole community gets sick with you. Only everybody's looking after the sick person. Nobody's looking after the person looking after the sick person. And there's a lot of trauma to unpack there if it's not attended to. And I don't know that this is really answering your question, other than to say, like, it's been a real mission of ours at Dear Jack to really fully recognize the caregiver, in most cases the spouse or the partner, but the unit that supports the actual patient, I think sometimes is so overlooked and ends up oftentimes equally traumatized, if not more so, and without any of the bells and whistles of having people going like, you're a hero and way to go. You know, there's just not that level of appreciation, and it's not intentional, but it is very common. And so I think, to the best of the ability of anybody who's facing this, you know, to be cognizant of the community around you and to be grateful, and to say thank you, you know, because I mean, I just think about what my parents and my sisters and my brothers and my wife did for me. I mean, it was a Herculean effort, you know, and it takes, you know, if you're lucky enough to have a community that is carrying you through this thing, you know, buy them dinner when you're done.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Cancer Horizons podcast or visit curetoday.com/podcasts. The Cancer Horizons podcast is the official podcast of Cure Magazine, the indispensable guide to every stage of the cancer experience. Find us on Facebook at Cure Today, on X at Cure_Today, and Instagram at Cure Today.